Aeneas stumbled over some ground roots that got under her feet. "You must leave me," Kyra told the dryads. "The forest resents my escape from its possession. It wants to see me destroyed."
"We are not leaving you," Nias snapped at her. "We set out together and we will finish this thing together."
She twisted around as a stone spear thunked into the ground beside her.
"The quick blood will tire of the chase before we do."
"You have to get away," Ishia said. "Without you, how can we follow the root cutter?"
Kyra knew Ishia was right, and the enormity of that knowledge sent a fire of determination racing through her. She had been the one to release Groth. It was her obligation to see him destroyed. The branch wraith looked at the gnarled, ugly trees. There was a way she could still use her magic, something she would dare only in a place as profane and debased as the forest of Beastgrave.
"Upend those trees,"
Kyra ordered Yanir and Nias, directing them to two wizened pines. She knew how gravely her command must disgust the dryads, yet they did not hesitate to obey. Seizing the two trees, they wrenched them from the earth and threw them to the ground. The exhibition of strength was something the pursuing tribesmen had not expected. Their pursuit faltered, and they fell back, grunting uncertainly to one another. They did not flee, and Kyra knew they were simply waiting for their witch doctor to catch up with them. Kyra acted before that could happen. She opened her essence once more, letting the force of her magic spread outwards. This time her object was the two trees the dryads had knocked over. Pulled from the ground, they had only a fragmentary connection to the forest, enough that Kyra could harness them for her spells without immediately exposing herself. The tribesmen started to advance once more. Several cast spears at the dryads, the weapons stabbing down into the earth only inches away from their targets. Kyra replied to the spear throwers with her own missiles. Expending some of her magic, focusing it into the fallen trees, she exploded sections of their trunks. A spray of splinters slashed into the hunters. Blazing with the arcane energies of Kyra's spell, they gashed the tribesmen, cutting their flesh and skewering their organs. Several were killed outright, collapsing as they were struck in vital spots. Others crawled away, bloodied and moaning in agony. Only a handful were left unharmed, and these backed away, their eyes wide with fright. There should have been a complete rout in that moment, had the witch doctor not arrived. The bearskin-clad priest glowered at the carnage wrought on his people. His intense gaze swept across the dryads to focus on Kyra. The man's face pulled back in a snarl of hate. Kyra focused her magic into the ruptured tree trunks. A second explosion of splinters went scything into the tribesmen. Several were wounded in the blast, but the one she intended to kill was still on his feet, apparently oblivious to his cuts and the blood streaming from his body. The witch doctor stretched both his arms outwards. Kyra felt the etheric energies swelling around him. The blood streaming from his body no longer dripped towards the ground, but was pulled up, drawn outwards. It pooled together, binding itself into the semblance of a body. Flames crackled around the shape, and the witch doctor made a chopping motion with his hand. The shape charged forwards, a boiling mass of blood and fire that resembled an enraged bull. The apparition smashed through the fallen trees, shattering their trunks as it swept through them. Kyra did not try to intercept the witch doctor's spell. She focused on the man who had conjured it into being. As the fiery bull charged through the trees, she exerted her energies into wrenching one of the branches away from the trunks. Like a javelin, the branch shot back along the path of the human spell, hurtling along the arcane residue to impale the caster's breast. The fiery bull evaporated, winking out of sight the instant the branch struck the witch doctor. The man clutched at the spear, his face a mix of shock and confusion. He struggled to speak, but only a blob of blood left his mouth. Strength left his legs, and he crashed to the earth. The death of their priest brought screams of horror from the tribesmen. Wounded or whole, they fled back through the forest, scrambling over each other in their haste.
"Do we pursue them?"
Yanir wanted to know. She flexed her claws, letting them click against each other.
"No," Kyra said. "They will not bother us again. It was their priest who was a threat to us. Without him, they will not come back."
She staggered as a wave of weakness swept through her. With the witch doctor's fire quenched, the forest was groping at the edges of her mind, trying to find its way back into her spirit. Nias caught at her and helped steady the branch wraith.
"We cannot rest," Kyra told the dryads. "We have to find the root cutter."
"This forest will not help us," Ishia warned. "The trees will not speak to us."
Kyra found bitter humor in the dryad's concern. If she lifted her protection from them, they would all find the trees only too eager to speak with them.
"We will have to find Groth's trail," she said. "We know where he entered the forest. If we start from there, Nias can follow his tracks."
Nias gave Kyra a dubious look.
"I can follow his tracks," she said, "but only if they are left alone."
Unlike Ishia, she had some inkling of why this forest was so silent. She suspected the overt hostility of the forest. If the trees could block their path, they could certainly interfere with the herd chief's trail.
"We have to try," Kyra decided.
Her eyes took on a subdued glow.
"If we cannot find tracks to follow, there are ways to force the forest to tell me what we need to know."
Kyra hoped her words sounded reassuring, because she knew what that kind of magic would entail. She would learn where Groth had gone through her spells, but it would be a last resort. If she opened herself again to Beastgrave's hideous forest, Kyra did not think she could keep it from consuming her. Chapter 7. Groth plunged into the sinister forest, finding it preferable to the crushing fingers of stone. He followed Togra's scent in preference to that of the other escaped beastkin. He needed followers to add to his strength, not traitors he would be compelled to fight. In his weakened condition, even a hornless bray might be able to overcome him. The surge of strength that enabled him to overcome the war chief had left him utterly drained. Stubbornness alone kept him upright and moving through the trees. There were other scents in the air beyond those of the surviving beastkin. The smell of the tribesmen was prominent, and Groth knew there were many of them hunting through the forest, trying to find their escaped sacrifices. Other scents were those of the animals that dared dwell in this eerie forest. Some were familiar to Groth. Most beasts took the odour of their fodder into their scent. He could pick out the smells of deer and caribou, the fug of something similar to a boar. There were carnivorous smells as well, those of wolf and bear, the musky reek of lizard, strong enough that Groth was left wondering how large the reptile was that had left the odour behind. As Groth trudged onwards, higher up the mountain slope, another scent reached his nose. A familiar scent, one that brought him to a halt when he smelled it.
"Sawgas," he muttered.
So the shaman was around, slinking through the trees. He had likely been driven off when the tribesmen rushed into the forest. Groth could not completely begrudge the turnskin for trying to save his own hide, though had Sawgas fought when the humans ambushed them, perhaps there would have been no need to rescue the beastkin from the stakes. Groth fingered the axe he'd claimed from the war chief. The human had chosen a good weapon for himself. It had a fine balance, and Groth knew from experience how keenly it could cut. Still, it felt odd in his hands after the brutal auric weapon he had been carrying since killing Cruxh. In his weakened state, he would not have been able to swing the cleaver anyway. Cries rang out through the forest. Groth listened to the shouts of tribesmen off in the distance. He could tell there were many of them, too many to fight. Fortunately, they were away to his left and somewhat below, while the scent he was following strayed up and to the right. The other Angor was still with Togra. It was only natural that they would band together and double their chances to survive. There was no hint that any of the other beastkin had joined up with them. Then again, the noses of Angors were not as keen as those of Gors. They might have failed to pick up the trail of Sorgas and the others. That thought gave Groth a troubling idea. Chagrak was free in the forest. If the Bestigor should pick up his scent and follow it, there would be no better opportunity for his challenger to confront him. Already weak from his beating, and still further by his fight with a war chief, Groth wondered if he could fight even an unarmed Chagrak. The chieftain growled at his own fears. Worry was a luxury he could not indulge. There was nothing he could do to keep Chagrak off his trail. Either his rival would find him or he wouldn't. If he did, all Groth could do was ensure he made the Bestigor earn his victory. The distant shouts of the tribesmen assumed a distinct character. Groth was certain the hunters had caught someone and were locked in battle. The more he listened, the more puzzled he became. Whoever the humans were fighting, it sounded like they were getting the worst of the battle. His brow knotted in bewilderment as the smell of smoke reached him. Were the tribesmen so confounded by their enemies they had resorted to burning the forest? He did not think a few stray Angors could provoke such desperation. Sorgas might, but the shaman's scent was up here, not down with the fighting. Whatever had confronted the hunters, Groth was thankful for it. If they were occupied with another enemy, they would not be able to focus on him. If things went well, he might even find his way inside the mountain before they had the chance to look for his trail. Groth rested beside one of the trees and closed his eyes. He clawed through the corridors of memory to see again the vision that had drawn him to Beastgrave. He fixated on one moment, trying to draw it into complete clarity. The cave he had seen himself entering, the opening that would lead him deep inside the mountain. He tried to recall little details, anything that might suggest where on the slopes the entrance might be. The sound of a stick snapping broke Groth from his recollections. He sprang away from the tree an instant before a spear gouged the trunk. He spun around and brought his axe up, but before he could swing, he was thrown back by the kick of a cloven hoof. Sprawling on the ground, Groth looked up at his attacker.
"Groth, slow," Chagrak snarled at him. "Groth, weak, too weak, stop Chagrak."
The Bestigor lunged at him with the spear he had stolen from some tribesman. The stone head scraped across the herd chief's ribs as he tried to roll away from it. Chagrak gnashed his fangs at Groth and stamped down on his arm, keeping him from swinging his axe or rolling away. The Bestigor drew the spear up, ready to drive it down into his victim's chest.
"Groth, die now!"
Before the spear could come stabbing downwards, a feral shape lunged at Chagrak. He was sent sprawling as a multitude of clawed feet tore at him and swinish jaws clamped tight around his throat. Dark blood spurted from the Bestigor's neck as he struggled to free himself from his attacker. Groth looked on, baffled by the sudden change of events. Chagrak was being mauled by Frang. Simple in its mentality, the beasthound had sought its adopted master after escaping into the forest. Chagrak had used Frang to track Groth, unaware that it had been the herd chief who had rescued it from the stake. The beasthound was not so mindless that it failed to remember who had helped it. When Chagrak attacked Groth, Frang had been forced to choose which side to take. Chagrak pushed up against one of the trees, pressing Frang against it and using his greater weight to crush the beasthound. Its claws lost their grip as pain shot through its body. The Bestigor locked his hands around the boar-like head, worrying at his throat. Slowly he pried the jaws open and freed himself. Chagrak scrambled away. He snatched up his fallen spear and made ready to impale the stunned Frang. Before he could, the cold steel of an axe chopped down into his skull. The stricken Bestigor stumbled and turned. There was a dull emptiness in his eyes as he watched Groth raise the axe for a second blow. Groth wasted no words on his rival. The axe came flashing down, crunching between the Bestigor's horns. Chagrak crumpled under the blow, his body pitching backwards to land beside Frang. Groth looked over at the beast hound and down at Chagrak's body.
"Eat now," he told Frang. "Chagrak, big, meat for both Groth and Frang."
Groth felt some measure of strength in his body after he had eaten. His last meal had been back in the jungle. The tribesmen had not bothered to feed their captives. From the way Frang gorged itself, he judged that it had been at least as long since the beast hound had been fed. By the time they had both got their fill, there was not much left of Chagrak. What little was still fit to eat was tied in a little bundle slung over Groth's back. Frang took up Togra's trail when Groth decided it was time to move along. The sounds of combat and the smell of smoke had diminished in the interim. That could mean the tribesmen had settled their fight and were looking for the beastkin. If they were, Groth did not intend to give them an easy hunt. The density of the forest grew less as they continued to follow the trail. Groth judged they must be angling back towards the bare rock face over the cliffs. An anxious whine from Frang reinforced that possibility. The beast hound could smell the blood of the sacrificed beastkin. It took some coaxing to get it to continue along the trail. The beast hound stopped abruptly and pawed at the ground. Groth stepped forwards and brushed away the soil. He soon found himself looking at a skull and the corroded remains of armor. The armor might have been iron at one time, but the skull was too thick and bulky for a human. One of the beard jaws? The bones were too old to have any distinct scent, so Groth could not be certain. Shifting the dirt around, he found a dagger that had miraculously defied the ravages of time. He studied its bright metal and tested the sharpness of its blade. With a grunt of appreciation, he tucked the weapon under his belt and waved Frang away from the grave. As the trail snaked around the last of the trees, Frang found more remains just under the surface. Indifferent before, now Groth took interest in the skeletons the beast hound unearthed. The herd chief was beginning to wonder if he was the first to come to the mountain seeking the god beast's grave and the power there. Surely a relic of such awesome might would have others looking for it. The sheer variety of bones littered about the slope convinced him it was so. The skulls of grots and ogors, bodies of humans and ratkin, each find made him more determined to press on. Gradually, as the trees thinned out still further and the terrain gave way to a sparse scattering of bushes and great jumbles of stone, Groth felt a sense of familiarity to his surroundings. Nothing so distinct as to make him certain, it was more nebulous than that. An idea that if he could just gain the right vantage, everything would fall into place. So strong did that inclination grow that he started to backtrack and circle the area. It was as he turned past an outcropping of stone, which had the rough semblance of a jumping fox, that Groth saw the place from his vision. The way the rocks lay, the trees off to one side, the scattered bushes with their scraggly branches, all of it matched the image he had beheld in the flames. There, below him, he knew he would find the cave, his way down inside the mountain. The moment Groth came to this realization, the scent he had been following shifted. No longer was the smell of Togra coming from ahead of him. The Ungor's scent came from behind. Clenching his fist tight around his axe, Groth spun around. Near the base of the Fox Rock, he saw Togra and the other Ungor. He saw someone else as well, someone whose scent only now came to him. Sorgas lifted his arms and gestured with his bray staff.
You are on the threshold of your destiny, mighty Groth. Surely you will not turn back.
Sorgas enjoyed Groth's confusion. It would be too complicated to explain to the herd chief the spell he had cast over him. The shaman had never faltered in his belief that Groth knew more details from his vision than he was capable of relating. There were things in his memory that were obscure to his consciousness, but they were there just the same. All that was needed was the proper coaxing to make them manifest. He had found the two Ungors after their escape. They had credited Sorgas with freeing them from the stakes, a misconception he did not intend to contradict. It worried him that someone else had used magic to save the beastkin. It meant there was another sorcerer who saw the potential in using Groth to guide them down inside Beastgrave. Sorgas had been content to leave the war herd to their fate and seek the path on his own. But now that there was someone else involved in the hunt, he was not willing to take that risk. He needed the quickest way to the slumbering godbeast. Groth's memories were that way. Projecting the scent of the Ungors, Togra and Vulak ahead of Groth acted as a focus to distract his mind while drawing out the obscured memories to truly guide him. Of course, Sorgas was nearly too clever for his own purposes. Chagrak's attack had been an unanticipated complication, fortunately one that had not ended in disaster.
This is the goal you have come so far to find, Sorgas said.
He kept his voice low and even, letting his tone unravel the magic he had cast upon Groth.
Sorgas, find cave first? Groth wanted to know.
He still maintained a wary grip on his axe. The shaman shook his head.
This is your destiny. Only you know the way. It was our place to follow you.
Sorgas, use magic, save Groth?
I put myself at great risk, Sorgas told him. The magic of the witch doctor was very strong, but I could not forsake my chieftain.
The glib reply appeared to satisfy Groth. He lowered his axe and walked towards Sorgas.
Groth, become beast lord. Make Sorgas greatest bray shaman.
He grunted and stamped his hoof.
Sorgas, chief all shamans.
Sorgas simply bowed at the vapid promise. Groth had no understanding of the ways of magic or of those who communed with the dark gods. Greatness among such was not a matter of appointments by lords and kings, but a measure of ability, knowledge and power. True power. The kind of power that was invested in the spirit of the one who possessed it, not in the mindless masses at their command.
I am honored.
Sorgas was certain the sarcasm was unnoticed by Groth. The herd chief simply nodded and waved towards the Ungors.
No more?
Groth asked.
Togra and Vulak were the only ones who escaped from the hunters, Sorgas claimed. I found them and kept them with me while we looked for you.
Groth scratched his ear as he listened to the explanation. He was already forgetting that it was the scent of the Ungors that he had followed here. In a few hours, even that scrap of doubt would be gone.
Frang, find Groth, the herd chief said. Chagrak, also find Groth.
He swung the bundle of meat off his back and let the other beastkin draw its scent into their noses. a crude but effective way of telling them the challenger had failed to kill him, and a stark warning to anyone with similar ideas. The morbid display had a note of ridiculousness about it, at least from the shaman's point of view. Groth was on his last legs. His struggles with Chagrak, his abuse by the tribesmen, his fight with their war chief, the flight through the forest and across the mountain, all of these had taxed Groth to the limit of endurance. Sorgas could tell there was nothing left but bluster. Frang could still put up a fight, but not Groth. The way he was now, even one of the Ungors could finish him off. Sorgas set the temptation aside. He was thinking of the magic that had freed the beastkin. He could not take any chances with Groth. It was a race, a contest between Sorgas and whoever had rescued the herd chief. With Groth under his influence, the shaman held an advantage over his unknown competitor. Whatever his feelings, he had to maintain that advantage.
"You have endured much," Sorgas told Groth. "You must allow me to bind your wounds and heal your hurts. You must be strong when you descend inside the mountain."
With his encouragement, Groth sat down at the base of the Fox Rock. When he was settled, Sorgas barked orders to Togra and Vulak, explaining to them the roots and tubers he wanted them to find.
"I will make a salve for your cuts," Sorgas explained. "Then make a broth to make you strong again."
He tapped the bundle of meat.
"I will use this. You will drink and add Chagrak's strength to your own."
Groth grumbled in protest.
"Groth, already strong. Stronger than Chagrak."
Sorgas detected the faintest suggestion of doubt in the herd chief's voice. He noticed Groth glance towards Frang. It wasn't necessary to evoke a divination spell to tell that however Chagrak was defeated, the Beast Hound had played some kind of role. Groth wasn't so confident in his unconquerable strength as he had been. That, Sorgas decided, was something that could prove very useful to him. Nias found Groth's trail easily enough.
"He is not trying to hide his tracks. Either he does not think anyone will pursue him, or he does not care if they do."
Kyra pondered the dryad's report.
"I doubt the root cutter surrendered to the tribesman without a fight. He may even have had to fight when he was freed."
The last impression she had when she directed the roots to free the beastkin had been some of the tribesmen charging towards the stakes.
"If he is injured, he should be easy to follow," Yanir said. "Easy to deal with when we do find him."
The Sylvaneth were just inside the forest, near where the tendrils of stone had emerged from the cliff. Everything was quiet. The rocky projections had swept away the stakes and the bodies. Terror at the death of their witch doctor had sent the rest of the tribesmen fleeing back to their village. Even the malignance of the forest felt like it had drawn back into itself.
"He has to be left at liberty until he has led us to the god beast's tomb," Kyra cautioned Yanir.
The old dryad's mouth twisted into a scowl.
"It is dangerous to toy with him," she said. "If the Quickbloods had overcome us after you set the root cutter free, what would have happened?"
"What good does it do to kill the root cutter, but leave this terrible power for another to find?"
Ishia responded.
"Kyra has been given a warning this time, but what if there is no warning when another enemy..."
"We know this enemy is real," Yanir interrupted. "Let us settle him and have done with it. The risk is too great to do otherwise."
Kyra appreciated Yanir's position, as far as it went.
"The Sylvan Conclave charged us with not only stopping Groth, but ending the threat of another like him. To do that, we have to find the god beast and destroy its heart."
She gestured at Beastgrave's peak. The mountain is vast. Without anything to guide us, we might spend years wandering inside it seeking the god beast's grave. And while we are looking, some other enemy, some new threat to the Thornwild, could lay claim to it. No, we have to keep following the root cutter.
Your choice will either save Thornwild or betray it. I hope you understand that.
The branch wraith's branches quivered at the damning words. They expressed perfectly the awful burden Kyra carried. Let us do all we can to ensure we are saviors, she told Yanir. She rested her hand on the dryad's shoulder.
I need your help. If we have any chance at all...
I have said what needed to be said, Yanir gestured at the tracks. You can follow only so long before the race is lost. How will you know when it is too soon to act and when it is too late?
Kyra was saved from trying to answer Yanir when Nias suddenly called out from further up the slope.
Someone has either joined the root cutter or else is following him, Nias said. More twist flesh, the beast hound that escaped the Thornwild, and one other.
It will be a harder fight when we find him, Yanir stated.
Maybe not, Kyra said, anxiety in her tone. We have seen enough to know Groth has enemies among the twist flesh. It could be one of his rivals following him. If the root cutter were to be killed, our task would be more difficult.
Difficult but clear, Yanir said. There would be no question of what to do or when.
Only where, Kyra told Yanir. And that is a question we might never find an answer to without Groth.
Nias followed the tracks higher up the slope. She pointed out to the others where the prints of more beastkin appeared. None of them merged with Groth's trail, only that of the beast hound and its companion. They kept on with the root cutter's trail until the Sylvaneth found a scene of violence. A heap of bloodied bones lay strewn about the trees. The admixture of human and animal characteristics made it clear these were the remains of a twist flesh.
It is not him, Nias told Kyra.
She indicated the tracks moving away from the carnage.
He left here with the beast hound.
She turned back to the pile of bones.
Whether that was a friend or an enemy, the root cutter decided to make a meal of it. A reminder of what we are fighting, Ishia said.
Looking at the young dryad, it was impressed on Kyra the stark difference between the Sylvaneth and the beastkin. Ishia had given up her own arm to save her companions. Groth had devoured one of his companions to satiate his hunger.
And why we must win, Kyra said.
She motioned for Nias to take up the trail again. The tracks led steadily upwards, winding through the forest and out towards the rocks above the sacrificial cliffs. Nias found further signs of other beastkin, but again the creatures made no effort to join Groth and the beast hound. It was only when the trail started to circle around a barren, boulder-strewn part of the slope that all of the tracks finally began to converge.
We must be especially wary, Nias told the others. These tracks are very recent. The twist flesh must be nearby.
Kyra glanced about the landscape, trying to spot anything that looked familiar, anything she might have remembered from her vision. Finally, her eyes strayed to a fox-shaped outcropping.
I have seen that before. It was part of my premonition. This is where the root cutter was heading. The tracks are very new, Nias repeated. I have found 5 distinct prints. The pattern is a bit muddled, but all of them lead towards that stone.
The dryads looked expectantly at Kyra. It was the branch wraith's decision. Did they stay back and wait to follow the rootcutter down inside the mountain, or did they attack now, before he had a chance to descend into Beastgrave? Kyra pictured the twist flesh gathered on the far side of the rock, plotting their savage evil. Maybe Yanir was right. Maybe it was too great a risk to leave Groth free. Maybe the best thing to do was destroy him now and take their chances finding the relic without him. The branch wraith trembled as the enormity of her choice swept through her, the consequences she had to balance against each other, the weight of her responsibility. The Sylvaneth approached the outcropping from opposite sides. Kyra was troubled by their lack of precise knowledge about where the twist flesh were, but Nias said it was impossible to find a good vantage to spy down on the fox-shaped rock. Trying to draw information from the few trees in the vicinity was something the branch wraith did not want to risk. This close to the enemy, she did not need to be fighting an internal battle against the forest's influence. Kyra's intention was to dispose of the beastkin who had joined Groth. If the Sylvaneth could spring a sudden and overwhelming attack, they could dispatch the rootcutter's allies before they were able to retaliate. Such a sudden reversal, she hoped, would panic Groth, and where more natural for him to flee to than the place that promised him a mighty power? Yanir and Nias circled the outcropping from the left, moving cautiously among the rocks. Nias's bark shifted colours to blend in with the rocks, but the effect was less successful than it was when she was in foliage. Yanir followed some distance behind the other dryad, with the idea that if anyone was watching, they would focus on her and miss Nias's approach. Kyra kept Ishia with her. They came at the outcropping from the right, moving along a sheer drop. By rights, it was an impossible climb, but by sinking their toe roots into the ground, they were able to create support for themselves where none should be. It was doubtful the twist flesh would expect enemies to set upon them from this quarter. With Ishia's infirmity and her limited magic, Kyra felt surprise even more essential to their attack. They would need to strike hard and fast, allowing their foes no chance to answer their challenge. Inch by inch, Kyra and Ishia advanced. Closing in upon the outcropping, they lost sight of Nias and Yanir. Kyra kept her ears sharp for the first note of battle, the merest murmur from the enemy that the dryads had been spotted. All remained silent, and she dared to hope that fortune had favoured their boldness. Finally, they were beside the outcropping. In a single effort, Kyra and Ishia drew in their toe roots and sprang over the ledge. They wheeled around the rock, ready to set upon the twist flesh with their thorny claws. Instead of foes, they found only a disappointed Yanir, pacing like a hungry panther, and Nias inspecting the ground. She looked up when she heard Kyra and Ishia coming towards her. "The rootcutter was here," Nias said. She lifted a gnawed bone off the ground. "The bite marks on this bone are the same as those we found before." She pointed down at the dirt and indicated a set of hoof prints. "These are his, and I've also found claw marks from the beast hound." Kyra felt a sickness worse than anything inflicted on her by Beastgrave's forest roiling up within her. They had lost Groth. He had slipped through their fingers, even as they closed around him. Bitterly, she recalled Yanir's words, that they would either be the saviours of Thornwild or its betrayers. She could have let the rootcutter die. Whatever he did, it would be her fault.
"How could he get away?" Ishia asked. "We were so close. He could not have passed us, going down, and we would have seen him if he tried to go up the mountain."
Nias indicated the tracks scattered all around the rock.
"There were five of them here," she said. "The rootcutter, the beast hound, two of the smaller beastkin, and another one with broad hooves."
She studied the marks on the ground.
"One of them was lying here for some time, wounded, judging by the traces of blood. It may have been Groth,
The others could have been tending his injuries. But where did they go?
Kyra needed to know the answer to that question. What the beastkin had been doing, how long they had lingered here, none of that mattered if the Sylvaneth didn't learn where they had gone. Kyra turned to the gnarled forest. If she was careful, she might be able to open herself to it, try to learn from the trees if Groth had in some way continued to ascend Beastgrave.
Everything we need to know is here, in the tracks,
Nias told Kyra, guessing what the Branchwraith was planning.
We only have to look and try to see.
Yanir raked her claws against a nearby rock.
You will never make sense of that muddle, she told Nias. A drunken gargant could have made no more confusing a mess.
Nias scowled at the old dryad.
There is nothing lost by trying.
Only time,
Yanir retorted.
Stop it!
Ishia yelled at the arguing dryads.
The only hope we have is to stick together.
A thought came to Kyra when she heard Ishia's plea.
No, she said. The problem is they are all together. That makes them confused. Alone is what we need.
The dryads looked at her in bewilderment. Kyra explained what she meant.
The tracks make no sense because they are all jumbled together. By accident or design, they are confused.
She pressed her hand to her left eye. Carefully, she drew out a long thread of glowing moss from the wooden depths of her face.
Nias, show me which are the tracks of the rootcutter.
Nias jabbed her finger at the hoofprints left by Groth. Kyra leaned above them and dropped the luminous thread into the track. A low chant rose from her as she called upon her magic. She would not harness the morbid influence of the forest to cast her spell. She would use a strand of her own essence. The moss glowed bright in the hoofprint. A similar glow pulsated up from a second track. A third became illuminated, and still a fourth. The Sylvaneth watched as one after another the tracks of Groth were picked out from the confusion on the ground. As each print blazed with light, it appeared as if a ghost were prowling around the rock. Following each light, they saw the path Groth had taken.
The tracks vanish into the rocks,
Yanir marveled. Indeed, the glowing prints, after wandering around the area, set off towards the piles of boulders facing the outcropping. Kyra drew back from her spell, and, as the magical energy returned to her, the light around the tracks vanished. It took a moment for her to recover from the conjuration and rekindle the light in her eye. When she did, she walked warily towards the boulders. She waved her hand before them, and detected the aura of an enchantment.
Something has been hidden here, Kyra informed her companions. Let us find out what it is. Be ready in case something is waiting for us behind the illusion.
Drawing upon her power once more, Kyra focused a counterspell upon the illusion. She was surprised by the enchantment's lack of resistance. It dissipated the instant she turned her attention to it.
That is where they went,
Ishia gasped. What had been hidden by the illusory boulders was the black mouth of a cave. The opening was wide and deep, large enough that a Trogoth could have easily lumbered inside with room to spare. A clammy, somehow oily cold wafted up from the shadowy interior, suggesting dark depths and vast caverns. Piled at the very limit of where the light reached was a heap of fleshless skulls. Kyra recognized those of humans, orcs, duardin, and even elves. Others bore no resemblance to anything in her experience. Whatever they were, the meaning of the heap was obvious. It was a warning. A warning the Sylvaneth were going to ignore. Kyra turned and motioned to Nias.
This is where Groth has gone. he has plunged inside the mountain to find the grave of the god-beast. We will follow his trail. The root-cutter cannot be allowed to gain the power he seeks.
Chapter 8. The cold dark of the cave rushed through Groth as he marched deeper inside the mountain. There was a dank smell to the air of sunless lands and ancient worlds. His fur bristled with each breath. Recoiling from the old evil, he drew air down into his lungs. But whatever horror he felt as he plunged through the blackness, it did not reach into his mind. The only thing Groth could think of was the destiny that awaited him somewhere down in the bowels of Beastgrave.
"Something is wrong with these walls,"
Sorgas warned Groth. The shaman was following a short distance behind Groth, the butt of his staff tapping against the floor as he walked. He was clinging to it a bit more than was usual, and there was a kind of rasping when he breathed. The herd chief knew Sorgas had used magic to speed the healing properties of the poultices he had used to heal his injuries. Groth even wondered if the poultices had done anything at all except serve as a mask behind which the extent of his sorcery could be hidden. Groth decided to try to test that idea. He felt strong, stronger than he had since leaving the jungle. It was time to see how strong Sorgas was.
"Turn skin fear," Groth snorted. "Jump from shadows."
The derisive note brought amused grunts from the two Ungors prowling a short distance ahead of their herd chief. Frang, scouting well ahead of the rest, came trotting back down the tunnel, drawn by the sound of Groth's voice. Sorgas glared at Groth, but did not say anything. The herd chief decided to push him further.
"Fear dark," he sneered at him. "Want run back to forest?"
He tapped his hoof against the stone floor, mimicking the sound of the bray staff.
"Want limp back to forest?"
The taunts made the shaman's lips curl back, exposing his long fangs.
"Do not provoke me," he warned.
He gestured with his staff at the walls.
"There is something not right here, something I did not expect."
Groth smelled the trace of fear in Sorgas's scent. Whatever else the shaman might say, he was afraid.
"Sorgas expect daylight in cave?"
Groth goaded him. Togra and Vulak laughed. Frang simply settled down on its haunches, a wary look on its porcine face. Sorgas took the bait. Pulling back to his full height, the shaman stamped his bray staff against the floor. The dim illumination provided by luminous moss clinging to the roof was washed away as a bright green glow swirled around the head of his staff.
"This is what the darkness hides,"
Sorgas snarled, and pointed his clawed hand at the wall. The two Ungors whined in fright and covered their eyes with their hands. Frang let loose a mournful howl and cringed against Groth's leg. The herd chief himself felt cold terror pulse through him as he looked on what the shaman's light revealed. The wall was composed of weird angles that the light from the moss had scarcely even suggested. Parts of it seemed to be both recessed and protruding at the same time, altering their aspect the moment the eye ceased to focus on them. The stone itself, if stone it could truly be called, was an eerie deep green with veins of brightly coloured crystals slashing through it. There were markings as well, strange symbols that marched from top to bottom in waving lines. They looked like ants or termites filing away in measured ranks. Each character was painted with a dark pigment that appeared to bleed into the stone itself, visibly sinking into the wall despite the opacity of the surface. None of this provoked a reaction from Groth. It was the other irregularities that met his gaze. There were larger shapes on or in the wall. He saw the body of a beard-jaw warrior, as big and vivid as life, the long crest of hair that rose from his otherwise bare scalp, the crimson tattoos that circled his limbs, the enormous axe that was clenched in his fists, the stout chains banded around his arms. It was all there, and as he watched, the bearded warrior moved, not outwards, away from the wall, nor forwards across the wall. There was motion, legs pumping, arms flexing, mouth open in a silent yell, but there was no movement. The axe-swinging fighter remained precisely where Groth had spotted him, and none of his actions moved him so much as an inch from where he was. When Groth looked away and back again, the beard jaw returned to its original pose and went through the same pattern of motions as before.
"There are others," Sorgas said. This time a sneer was in his voice.
He pointed at a spot on the opposite wall where an armored knight stood, the mask of his helm cast in a menacing scowl. The warrior was huge, a head taller than even Groth, but his great size did not make him any less a facet of the wall. He swung his mace in vicious arcs, trying to batter through some barrier, but only while the herd chief was watching. As with the beard jaw, when he looked away and back again, the knight simply repeated the same pattern.
"Magic, old and horrible," Sorgas stated. "Reflections of life, or life in reflections."
He nodded at a hunched, rat-faced creature a little distance further along the passage. When Groth looked, the rat man curled itself into a trembling ball of fur and fangs, its ears twitching back and forth.
"Do not look too long," Sorgas told Groth. "Let your gaze linger, and your image may join them."
Groth felt the challenge in the shaman's tone. He refused to be cowed by Sorgas. He also was not bold enough to accept the challenge. He stomped forwards and closed his hand around the illuminated head of the Braystaff, returning the tunnel to near darkness.
"Dark, bitter," Groth said.
He locked eyes with Sorgas, a contest of dominance. It was the shaman who blinked first.
"You are right."
Sorgas snapped his fingers and the light vanished entirely. The weird walls with their strange script and living images returned to the shadows.
"There are times when what you don't see can't hurt you."
Groth grunted and removed his hand from the Braystaff. The Ungors and Frang still smelled of fear. He would show them that he was not afraid.
"Light, stupid, show everyone war herd here."
Sorgas bowed his head.
"Of course," he muttered. "How foolish of me."
Groth doubted the shaman's contrition. Sorgas was crafty. The whole scene might have been arranged by him to show the others the strange magic of this place and convince them they needed his protection from that magic. If the herd chief was not convinced they did need that protection, he would end his misgivings by splitting the shaman's skull with his axe. No, Groth decided. The fear was real. Sorgas was uneasy around these walls. That meant there was good reason to be far away from them. He did not know how it was possible for the creatures he had seen to be drawn into or onto the stone, but he was happy not to know.
"We go,"
Groth said. He kicked Frang away from his leg and motioned for the beast hound to move out ahead of the other beastkin. Togra and Vulak did not need any encouragement. Sorgas was tapping his staff against the floor.
"We go,"
Groth repeated. Sorgas looked up, a grin on his lupine face.
Someone may be following us," he said.
He continued tapping the floor with his staff, inching his way across the tunnel.
"If so, I want to dissuade them from continuing such foolishness."
The staff was leaving little marks on the ground. They formed a line that stretched almost from one side to the other. Almost, because at either end there was a little gap, a space around which someone could squeeze if they pushed up against the walls. The shaman stopped tapping and stepped across the line he had made. As he did, there was a faint flicker of green light along the floor.
There, it is done.
Groth stared at Sorgas's handiwork and put a question to the shaman.
Who follow? He demanded.
Does it matter?
Sorgas replied. He tapped his clawed hand against the talismans hanging from his horn.
Someone or no one? They will regret taking up our trail.
The herd chief growled in agreement, but he did not think this was an idle precaution by Sorgas. To Groth, it appeared the shaman expected someone to be following them. What was more, Groth suspected Sorgas knew precisely who was following them. Sorgas took some petty pleasure in observing Groth as the chieftain ambled further down the tunnel. He was striving so hard to comprehend things far beyond his mental acuity. Failing, he tried to make a show of his courage and to press upon his followers that he was not afraid. That might work with the dim-witted Ungors and Frang, but Sorgas was not deceived. The shaman tried to keep from looking at the tunnel walls. Groth might truly be able to dismiss from his savage brain things for which he had no understanding, but Sorgas was not comfortable marching beside the inscrutable. That there was some manner of malevolent magic at work on or within the walls, he was in no doubt. The nature of that enchantment, how exactly it worked and how it was evoked, were mysteries to him. It might be something to do with the curious angles in which the stone was shaped, or the ant-line columns of symbols cut into the rock. Maybe both of them, in conjunction, produced the effect. Then again, they might have nothing at all to do with the spell laid on this tunnel long ago. Whatever the facts, the trap he had left behind the beastkin would be interesting. Their pursuers would be given a good chance to discover what secrets the walls held. Sorgas knew they were being followed. Groth and the others had been freed by some kind of magic. It was useful to let the beastkin think he had engineered their escape, but he knew the spells had been the work of someone else. If he needed any further proof, it had come to him while tending Groth by the outcropping. He had sensed the presence of another sorcerer nearby. The witch doctor from the village, or some other. Whoever they were, it was obvious to him they were following Groth. Fortunately, he had been able to impress on the herd chief the need for urgency, without revealing any of the details. Restored by a bit more of his magic than Sorgas was comfortable expending, Groth led them straight to the illusory boulders, the rocks he insisted should not be there according to his vision. The cave was there, behind the illusion, along with a tunnel that led from the back of the cave. Sorgas was still troubled by the veil of enchantment that concealed the opening. On the surface, it had a simple duiama. Yet a moment of scrutiny with his arcane sense, and it took on a primal quality of age and power. He did not like to contemplate what manner of being could cast such a spell. It was like considering the fabric of the gods themselves. Sorgas shifted his attention away from the cave and the tunnel and whoever was pursuing them. His immediate concern was here and now to follow Groth through the depths of the mountain and find the slumbering god beast. The shaman tapped his staff against the floor and listened to the cadence of its echo. Quick and loud meant they were closely bound by walls. Slow and faint would mean they were in some larger cavern. It was a mile down into the mountain before the echoes changed from fast to slow. Since the others did not notice the change, Sorgas decided to make it known to Groth.
The tunnel widens here,
Sorgas informed the herd chief. Groth motioned him to be quiet and tapped the side of his nose. Sorgas was a turnskin, and while he was able to discern the presence of a sorcerer far more readily than the beastkin, their facility with sense far surpassed his own. When Groth pointed ahead of them and to the right, Sorgas turned in that direction.
Light,
the herd chief said. Sorgas hissed the incantation, funneling the heavy ether through his body and into the head of his staff. A bright light expanded outwards. In its glow, the area ahead of the beastkin was illuminated. The eerie walls of the tunnel were gone, replaced by much rougher masses of stone and earth. There were a few patches of luminous moss on the roof, which shone even brighter in the light of Sorgas's spell. A pool of dark water lay ahead of them, but to the right, where Groth had directed his light, was a wide crack in the wall, a cave in the side of the cavernous expanse. Sorgas noticed that there were bones and weapons scattered around the opening, but they barely registered with him when he looked on the hulking creature that stood at the mouth of the cave. It was enormous, twice as tall as the shaman and nearly as wide. It had a leathery pale grey skin. The shoulders, top of the head and backs of the arms were covered in thicker scales that had a deep blue colour. The creature's arms were long and powerful, hanging well past the knees of its massive legs. The head jutted outward from the sprawl of its shoulders, the merest stump of a neck supporting it. Huge ears drooped from the sides of the compressed skull, their lobes tattered. The face was dominated by a bulbous nose, to either side of which a yellow eye stared. The jaw beneath the nose jutted forwards, big tusks pressing over the upper lip. The mouth itself was a great gash that stretched from ear to ear. The brute stared at the beastkin, gawping at them in dismay. Its sluggish wits reacted to the sting of the same light that let it see the warherd. Belatedly, it brought its arm up to shield its eyes, while a pain-filled groan rumbled from its cavernous mouth.
Trogoth!
Groth cursed. He clenched his axe tight and snarled at the other beastkin.
Kill! Kill while it blind!
Uttering their feral war whoops, the Ungors rushed the scaly monster. Vulak's stone axe fragmented as he struck the Trogoth's belly. The spear Togra carried fared a little better, punching a hole in the brute's side. When he drew the weapon away, blood flowed from the wound. But before he could stab the creature again, the flesh around the injury